This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Discover how to lead a better life in our age of confusion. Enjoy this BBC audiobook collection, written and presented by best-selling author Oliver Berkman, containing four useful guides to tackling some central ills of modernity: busyness, anger, the insistence on positivity, and the decline of nuance.
Our lives today can feel like miniature versions of this relentless churn of activity. We find we're rushing around more crazily than ever. Somewhere, when we weren't looking, it's like busyness became a way of life.
Start listening to Oliver Berkman, Epidemics of Modern Life, available to purchase wherever you get your audiobooks.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
So I've just got home after a really long day on one of the secure psychiatric wards that I was working
on. I'm Jenny Okolo. I'm an occupational therapist and I work specifically in psychiatry in the UK.
I tried out a sensory group.
I help people that might be suffering from mental health issues such as psychosis, depression or eating disorders.
I brought some of my essential oils and I research how to create your own stress ball.
I work specifically in forensic mental health. That's mental health that intersects with our justice system.
And how some of these essential oils can help calm.
I want to dismantle the idea that committing a crime means your life is over. I've always looked into why and how we can support people instead.
One of the guys gave me some feedback and said, actually, miss, this was really nice. Like, I've never considered this before.
In many countries around the world, prison populations are exploding. Prisons in the UK are so full that prisoners are being released early, while the United States has the highest prison population in the world. But in some European countries, something strange is happening. Prisons are closing, and reoffending rates are down as well. It's all thanks to a new way of thinking about prisons and prisoners.
It's really about assuming that the people who are locked up are human beings.
It really is quite an effective system, more effective than just a general prison sentence.
Because you just don't think of the right questions sometimes if you're within a system that is dominated by criminal justice priorities.
In what sense are we as societies caught up in a narrow way of imagining what justice and rehabilitation might look like? How might we help convicted criminals to escape the dangers of repeating damaging behaviours? For the BBC World Service, this is Prison of the Mind.
I'm Jenny, and first of all, how do I pronounce your name so I get it right?
So it's pronounced Rifolino.
Rifolino.
That's it.
Love it, love it. So just a little bit about myself.
One of the things that inspires me in my professional work is the sense that there must be alternatives to simply locking people up. I've been looking around the world for approaches to criminal justice that genuinely rehabilitate offenders and help to break the cycles of crime. And over the years, I've met many people with similar but unique stories like that of Refolina Richters.
I came from a neighborhood where doom crime was normal, you know. By the time I was 13, I got involved in a local gang. And, you know, we started doing all types of stuff, stealing at school, picking fights at other schools, eventually also robbing other kids. And when I was 13, I got arrested for the first time. And then I went to juvenile prison.
This was in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, in the 1990s.
If I look back at the people, I felt they were, like, really concerned about my well-being. They spoke a lot, you know. It's like, hey, when you get out, make sure that you don't fall back into the same trap, or make sure that you find a hobby. But there wasn't a system set up, you know. Like, there were no mentors who I could meet outside.
One of the biggest problems in the implementation of criminal justice is recidivism. Reoffending. Recidivism rates are hard to quantify and compare between countries. But according to data from UK Research and Innovation, 75% of British ex-inmates reoffend within 9 years of release, and 39.3% within the first 12 months.
I was thinking to myself, I'm never going to do this again. But when I came out, I was sort of welcomed as a young hero. And that sort of like also gave me aware, like, okay, so this is a way to get like more status and attention. So instead of desisting, I started doing more crime. Sometimes I got arrested, sometimes not. Sometimes I got away with it. But that also brought a lot of heaviness onto my shoulders, you know, and into my mind. I got involved with hard drugs and started selling heroin.
Ruffolino's path took him back into a life of criminality. What he lacked, I would argue, is an approach to criminal justice that placed mental health at its center and took a more holistic view of the individual. 30 years on, the story in his country is quite different.
I think what is super important, and I think something we focus on quite well in the Netherlands, is making reintegration into society as safe as possible.
Here's Mariëtte de Vries, a forensic psychiatrist and clinical director of the Dutch Institute for Forensic Psychiatry and Psychology.
Lots of factors would be considered in such an assessment. At the core of it would be, is there any psychiatric illness, personality problems, addictive problems, matters like that. But also looking at somebody's financial status, housing situation, do they have social connections? Are they embedded in society? Do they have like a meaningful job or activity during the daytime?
Through my work as an occupational therapist, I know how important it is to see the whole person in front of me, to think holistically, not just looking at psychiatric or addictive issues, but considering all factors. It's about more than reintegration. It's about helping individuals rediscover purpose and rebuild confidence within their communities. The Dutch system has been pioneering a new idea of what prison might be, a new kind of forensic psychiatric centre.
It's called the Oostvaderskliniek, which is in Almere, in the center of the Netherlands. The goal is that people in the end will return to society and safely reintegrate.
A modern, glass-fronted building surrounded by lush vegetation. At first glance, the Oostvaderskliniek might look like the headquarters of a tech company. But the symbols adorning the entrance, above the name, hint at its purpose. From left to right, straight vertical lines morph into plus signs, which then in turn morph into forward-pointing arrows. To me, the symbols suggest ideas of help and purpose. The Oostvaderskliniek is a high-security forensic psychiatric hospital where patients are rehabilitated into what forensic healthcare professionals call a pro-social life, a life away from crime. Some of the patients have been convicted with the most extreme kinds of crimes and might have severe psychiatric and behavioural issues as well. I know from my experience in hospitals here in the UK that it can be a tough job sometimes.
I think everybody would say that they're really committed to the people that they work with. I think everybody's quite aware that these people themselves usually have quite a hard time as well. It's not about just justifying the behaviour that's been there, but it's really try and change people and get people on a different path for the future.
The clinic is designed in a way that helps those living there to gradually adapt to the idea of one day returning into free society.
First, people sort of practice within the facility themselves with having more freedoms and more responsibilities. And in this specific clinic, they got like tiny houses in the center of the facility, which would be sort of the last stage, sort of within the walls of the facility. And then people start practicing outside. And then depending on what the end result could be, people either live independently again or they might stay in some sort of supported housing facility. But it is this sort of step-down care.
The clinic's novel approach to reintegration, step by step, is achieving some impressive results.
The recidivism rate overall is about 20%. But that would be sort of for all offending. And then if you look at like the more really like serious offending, I think that goes down to about 9%. And then the really serious offending, with the long prison sentence, is about like 4%, 5%. So it really is quite an effective system, more effective than just a general prison sentence.
How might things have been different for Rifolino? Had he been part of a system which took into account his story and what he'd been through? A system which thought about what would happen when he left?
It's like I was carrying this heavy bag around with me for like years and years, right? Because I saw my father die in front of me when I was 5 years old. You know, I went through a lot of shame and pain. And my mom, you know, she was a strong black woman, but she had to be a dad and a mom all at the same time. And she didn't show her emotions because she really felt terrible about the way that I lost my dad. You know, if I look back now, if we would have like young coaches, mentors, we could meet inside of prison and then they would like meet us when we were outside and then just like, you know, walk us through the possibilities of doing hobbies or following a education that is more suiting of what we think we would want to achieve in life. Getting out of crime is a gradual process, but sometimes you need a helping hand of somebody who can guide you.
You are listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Discover how to lead a better life in our age of confusion. Enjoy this BBC audiobook collection, written and presented by best-selling author Oliver Berkman, containing four useful guides to tackling some central ills of modernity: busyness, anger, the insistence on positivity, and the decline of nuance.
Our lives today can feel like miniature versions of this relentless churn of activity. We find we're rushing around more crazily than ever. Somewhere, when we weren't looking, it's like busyness became a way of life.
Start listening to Oliver Berkman, Epidemics of Modern Life, available to purchase wherever you get your audiobooks.
Northeast of the Netherlands, there's another country where the approach to prison and to prisoners reflects a less common way of thinking about criminal rehabilitation.
In Sweden, we have a long tradition of rehabilitation in criminal practice, and it's very closely related to our view on our social welfare systems.
This is Dr. Martin Lardien, a clinical psychologist working with high-risk offenders in the Swedish prison system.
People need good strategies to help them change. And if we are not ready to help them to get employment, etc., it's very, very difficult to maintain a pro-social life outside prison.
At the heart of Sweden's attitude towards rehabilitation is an approach that goes beyond simple sentencing. It's called the risk-need-responsivity model.
First, we have the so-called risk principle that tells us that the higher risk that the client will commit a new crime, the more intensive interventions are needed to reduce that risk. The need principle tells you what factors, what things you have to help the person change. And the third part is called the responsivity principles, which tells us how an intervention or a treatment shall be designed and conducted to increase the person's possibilities of learning from these interventions.
The risk-need responsivity, or R&R model, was first proposed in 1990. After initially being piloted between 2011 and 2013, it was then rolled out across Sweden in 2014. By 2020, Sweden had achieved the lowest reoffending rate in Europe at just 16%. In fact, they closed four prisons in 2022 because they simply weren't needed anymore. And Sweden also has an alternative path for rehabilitation.
The earlier we can intervene with individuals who are suffering from severe mental illness, I believe we will prevent crime along the way.
Dr. Jonas Forsman is a forensic psychologist working for the Swedish National Board of Forensic Medicine.
I assess individuals who are supposed to be sentenced to prison or to forensic psychiatric care. What my work is mainly doing is to give an assessment to the court, whether I find the inmate at that time fit for prison or not. And if they're not fit for prison, they should be sentenced to forensic psychiatric care. In those cases, they suffer from a severe mental illness. the forensic psychiatric system is built up in such a way that individuals are sentenced for quite some time. And during the initial phase, they will be confined to hospitals and will not have the ability to leave the ground until they are assessed to be safe enough to be in the system or in the society.
Where a regular prison sentence might be relatively short, forensic psychiatry aims to treat the mental health issues that led to the initial crimes, a process which can take many years. While in inpatient care, specialists work with the offenders to address the underlying issues that they're facing. Some may have a history of substance misuse. Some may have underlying mental health concerns. Others may have neurodevelopmental conditions. Throughout the process, medical staff are working with the client to ensure that they will eventually have a life to return to, which means contact with family and the community, something to work towards, and crucially, a place to live. Without these essential elements, the hospital may not be able to discharge their patients.
For the court to be able to release the patient into the community completely, i.e. terminating the care, the person has to have a low risk of relapsing, and that includes that they tried for housing, for communal work or other jobs.
Sweden's options for criminal rehabilitation puts the individual at the centre of the journey away from criminality. It's not just a sentence that gets someone back on track. It's clear and direct interventions before, during, and after prison.
From our point of view, effective criminal rehabilitation has to be a teamwork. So you need to have people who can support clients during prison and after release. We as professionals can only have guidance, support, etc., to go through this journey towards a life without criminality. But it's the person who has to do the change.
This emphasis on remaining connected stands in stark contrast to many other systems of criminal justice around the world.
The American model is really backwards looking, right? We're going to give you this many years because of this thing you did in the past, which of course can never be changed.
Doran Larson is Edward North Professor of Literature at Hamilton College and the founder and co-director of the American Prison Writing Archive.
Whereas the Nordic countries really are forward-looking, right? Today you arrive here, we're getting you ready to go back out into the world. All the research shows that the closer the contact that's maintained between an incarcerated person and their family, the more successful their reentry is going to be. And for example, in New York State, a large number of the people who are in the New York prison system are from the five boroughs of New York, but they can be as much as 400 or 500 miles away from where their homes and their families are. In the Nordic countries, they see each other very much as peers. The idea is rather than having employees of the prison system who offer, for example, medical care, education, counseling, to bring in people from the local community into much smaller prisons, which are located closer to home, so that they have continuity, so that you might, for example, be able to see the same doctor you've been seeing, you know, for the 5-6 years you've been locked up, or continue with an education program that's there locally available.
While the focus on rehabilitation seems to be creating positive results in Sweden and the Netherlands, criminal justice systems are too difficult to compare directly.
So if you look at recidivism rates in Sweden and Finland and Denmark, they're not very dissimilar to other Northern European countries. It's not really like with like in terms of comparison.
Sina Fasel is a professor of forensic psychology at the University of Oxford. He points out that the story is more complicated.
So people often talk about repeat offending rates or recidivism rates, but if you look at another marker of prison quality, and this is a very, I think, important marker, which is people who die in prison, you know, particularly preventable deaths like suicide. Sweden has quite high rates of suicide. So there isn't a clear picture that emerges that somehow this model is superior than other models.
Okay.
I think criminal justice systems around the world have tended to focus on repeat offending. And I think that's obviously important from a public safety perspective, but I think it has to be done very carefully because there's lots of different ways of counting that.
Mm-hmm.
So do you count arrest? Do you count conviction? Do you count the crime date? What period of time do you count it for? There's lots of different ways of measuring it.
When looking at post-release, right, so of an inmate that's gone back into the community, I know for me, like, as a forensic occupational therapist, there are some challenges, especially getting the person involved in vocational work and building those routines and being involved in the communities. What's your view on, I guess, the importance of continuing the work?
I worked as a prison psychiatrist for 13 years. And, you know, the issue for us was more just to make sure people had links to the right level of care in the community. It's too much, I think, in some people to expect that the prisons can sort this out in sometimes relatively short periods of time. So if someone comes into prison, let's say they're 25 years old and they've had multiple problems in the community, it's very difficult childhoods and then health-related problems, and they're in prison for a few months or a year or so, it's not really realistic to expect that the prison can address an accumulated set of problems, which sometimes are very complex and interrelated and sometimes involve relationships people have with individuals outside.
While efforts continue from inside the criminal justice system to rehabilitate people, there's work happening from outside as well. Here's Raffaellino again.
I remember one day standing at the back of Central Station in Amsterdam, and somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, you got some stuff for me?" I said, "Yeah, man, I got some stuff for you." And I sold him the heroin. The moment that I sold it to him, it was like I could see myself standing and thinking to myself, "What in heaven's name are you doing?" But somehow something inside me says, "Hey, this is not you. There's more for you than this in life."
Nowadays, Raffaellino runs the Criminal Minded Foundation, an organization that aims to help young adults in and outside of prison to discover their talents and skills. His life turned around when he began to get involved with a church.
That moment really changed my life, turned my life around. And I started making music in the church. I started talking to people about my life experiences. I started making music, writing songs. And eventually, I got asked to do like workshops. Then I got an invite to go back to the youth prison that I once did my jail time in. And I shared my life story. And during that moment, I looked in the crowd and I saw like a young kid from 13, and I knew him from one of my workshops at the youth center. And I was thinking like, wow, what is he doing here? And he said, "Yeah, man, you know, we went into a house, we took some stuff at night, and the day after we got caught." The moment that he was sharing his story, it was like I could sort of see myself, you know, back then. And that moment I said, "Hey, I want to be there for kids like him."
Raffaellino's use of music inspired me to try something new at work. Karaoke.
What song should he play?
The only tension is deciding what song to sing.
You said you like country.
Community is at the core of so many of the success stories in criminal justice. People need to feel like they have a home and sense of place.
He's good, isn't he?
These tools that forensic psychologists and therapists use to help offenders are just that. Tools. Tools that might help people take their first steps onto a path that's better for them and ultimately society.
Woo! Amazing. That's a good song. That's a good feel-good song.
So, perhaps the answer to criminal justice lies not just in a specific model or a set of tools, but a mindset shift, a choice to focus on rehabilitation and to recognize that those who have done wrong are capable of change.
We need to be looking forward, right? Who do they want to be? Who do we want them to be?
I think the good news is that a lot of the times things go really well.
I think this is a success story for many people. And that's amazing.
Yoga is more than just exercise. It's the spiritual practice that millions swear by. And in 2017, Miranda, a university tutor from London, joins a yoga school that promises profound transformation.
It felt a really safe and welcoming space. After the yoga classes, I felt amazing.
But soon, that calm, welcoming atmosphere leads to something far darker, a journey that leads to allegations of grooming, trafficking and exploitation across international borders.
I don't have my passport, I don't have my phone, I don't have my bank cards, I have nothing.
The passport being taken, the being in a house and not feeling like they can leave.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are unveiled and hidden realities are exposed. In this new series, we're confronting the dark side of the wellness industry, where the hope of a spiritual breakthrough gives way to disturbing accusations.
You just get sucked in so gradually, and it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
And it's like this secret that's there. I wanted to believe that, you know, that whatever they were doing, even if it seemed gross to me, was for some spiritual reason that I couldn't yet understand.
Revealing the hidden secrets of a global yoga network.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this and to put my reputation and everything else on the line. I want truth and justice. And for other people to not be hurt, for things to be different in the future.
To bring it into the light and almost alchemize some of that evil stuff that went on and take back the power.
World of Secrets, Season 6, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.